I became, he says, to those which were under the law, as being under the law, although I myself was not under the law, but to those who were without law, I was as being without law, since I was not without the law of God, but in the law of Christ. Whence it is not accurately said, the righteous have no law, or the righteous are without law, but that the law was not made for the righteous. That is, it is not, as it were, imposed upon unwillingly subjects, but given freely to willing hearts by him to whose sweet inspiration it is due. Wherefore the Lord also beautifully says, take my yoke upon you, as if he would say, I do not impose it upon you against your will. Take it if you are willing. Otherwise, you will find not rest, but labor for your souls. The law of charity, then, is good and sweet. It is not only light and sweet to bear, but it renders bearable and light the laws even of slaves and mercenaries. But it does not destroy these, but brings about their fulfillment. As the Lord says, I am not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill. The one it moderates, the other it reduces to order, and each it enlightens. Charity will never be without fear, but that fear is good. It will never be without any thought of interest, but that a restrained and moderated one. Charity, therefore, perfects the law of the slave when it inspires a generous devotion, and that of the mercenary when it gives a better direction to interested wishes. So then, devotion mixed with fear does not annul those last, but purifies them. Only it takes away the fear of punishment, which servile fear is never exempt from. And this fear is clean and filial, enduring forever. For that which is written, perfect love takes away fear, is to be understood of the fear of punishment, which is never wanting, as we have said, to slavish fear. It is, in fact, a common mode of speech, which consists in putting the cause for the effect. As for cupidity, it is then rightly directed by the charity which is joined with it, since ceasing altogether to desire things which are evil, it begins to prefer those which are better, nor does it desire good things except in order to reach those which are better, which when, by the grace of God, it has fully obtained the body and all the good things which belong to the body, will be loved only for the sake of the soul for the sake of God, and God alone for himself. However, as we are in fleshly bodies and are born of the desire of the flesh, it is of necessity that our desire or affection should begin from the flesh. But if it is rightly directed, advancing step by step under the guidance of grace, it will at length be perfected by the Spirit. Because that is not first which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterwards that which is spiritual. It is needful that we should first bear the image of the earthly and afterwards that of the heavenly. First, then, a man loves his own self for self's sake, since he is flesh, and he cannot have any taste except for things in relation with him. But when he sees that he is not able to subsist by himself, that God is, as it were, necessary to him, he begins to inquire and to love God by faith. Thus he loves God in the second place, because of his own interest, and not for the sake of God himself. But when, on account of his own necessity, he has begun to worship him and to approach him by meditation, by reading, by prayer, by obedience, he comes little by little to know God with a certain familiarity, and in consequence to find him sweet and kind. And thus, having tasted how sweet the Lord is, he passes to the third stage, and thus loves God no longer on account of his own interest, but for the sake of God himself. Once arrived there, he remains stationary, and I know not if in this life man is truly able to rise to the fourth degree, which is no longer to love himself except for the sake of God. Those who have made trial of this, if there be any, may assert it to be attainable. To me, I confess, it appears impossible. It will soon be so without doubt, when the good and the faithful servant shall have been brought into the joy of his Lord and inebriated with the fullness of the house of God, for being, as it were, exhilarate, he shall in a wonderful way be forgetful of himself. He shall lose the consciousness of what he is, and being absorbed altogether in God, shall attach himself unto him with all of his powers, shall thenceforth be one spirit with him. I consider that the prophet referred to this when he said, I will enter into the powers of the Lord. O Lord, I will make mention of thy righteousness only. He knew well that when he entered into the spiritual powers of God, he would be freed from all the infirmities of the flesh, and would have no longer to think of them, but would be occupied only with the perfections of God. Then for certain, each of the members of Christ would be able to say of himself what Paul said of their head, if we have known Christ according to the flesh, yet now henceforth we know him no more. There no one knows himself according to the flesh, because flesh and blood will not inherit the kingdom of God. Not that the substance of flesh will not be there, but that every fleshly necessity will be away. The love of the flesh is to be absorbed into the love of the Spirit, and the weak human passions which exist at present will be absorbed into powers divine. Then the net of charity, which is now drawn through a great and a vast sea, and does not cease to bring together from every kind of fish, at length drawn to the shore, shall retain only the good, rejecting the bad, and while in this life charity fills with all kinds of fishes the vast spaces of its net, suiting itself to all according to the time, the making, in a sense, its own, and partaking of the good and evil fortunes of all. It is accustomed not only to rejoice with them that rejoice, but to weep with them that weep. But when it shall have reached the shore of eternity, casting away as evil fish all that it bore with grief before, it will retain those only which are sources of pleasure and gladness. Then Paul will no longer be weak with the weak, or be scandalized with those who are scandalized, since scandal and weakness will be far away. We ought not to think that he will still let fall tears over those who have not repented here below. But as it is certain that there will no longer be sinners, so there will be no one to repent. Far be it from us to think that he will mourn and deplore those whose portion is everlasting fire with the devil and his angels, when in that city of God, which the streams of that river make glad, the gates of which the Lord loves more than all the dwellings of Jacob, because in those dwellings, although the joy of victory is sometimes tasted, yet the combat always continues, and sometimes the struggle is for life. But in that dear country, there is no place for adversity or sorrow. As in that psalm we sing, the abiding place of all those who rejoice is in thee. And again, everlasting joy shall be unto them. How then shall any remembrance be of mercy, where the justice of God shall be alone remembered? There can be no feeling of compassion called into exercise where there shall be no place for misery or occasion for pity. I am impelled to prolong this already lengthy discourse, dearly beloved and much longed for brethren, by the very strong desire I have of conversing with you. But there are three things which show me that I ought to come to an end. First, that I fear to be burdensome to you, that I am ashamed to show myself so loquacious. Third, that I am pressed with domestic cares. In conclusion, I beg you to have compassion for me. And if you have rejoiced for the good things that you have heard of me, sympathize with me also, I pray, in my two real temptations and cares. He who related these things to you has, no doubt, seen some few little things, and has valued these little things as great. While your indulgence has easily believed what it willingly heard, I felicitate you, indeed, on that charity which believes all things. But I am confounded by the truth which knows all things. I beg you to believe me in what I say of myself, rather than any other who has only seen me from without. No man knows the things that are in a man, save the spirit of man which is in him. I assure you that I do not speak of myself by conjecture, but out of full knowledge, and that I am not such as I am believed and said to be. I fell assured of this, and I confess it frankly, that so I may obtain your special prayers, and thus may become such as your letter sets forth, than which there is nothing that I desire more. Letter number 47 to the brother of William, a monk of Clairvaux. Bernard, after having made a striking commendation of religious poverty, reproaches in him an affection too great for worldly things, to the detriment of the poor and of his own soul, so that he preferred to yield them only to death, rather than for the love of Christ. Although you are unknown to me by face, and although distant from me in body, yet you are my friend, and this friendship between us makes you to be present and familiar to me. It is not flesh and blood, but the Spirit of God which has prepared for you, though without your knowledge, this friendship, which has united your brother William and me with a lasting bond of spiritual affection, which includes you too through him, if you think it worth acceptance. And if you are wise, you will not despise the friendship of those whom the truth declares blessed and calls kings of heaven, which blessedness we would not envy to you, nor, if communicated to you, would it be diminished to us, nor would our boundaries be at all narrowed if you should reign over them too. For what cause can there be for envy where the multitude of those who share a blessing takes nothing from the greatness of the share which each enjoys? I wish you to be the friend of the poor, but especially their imitator. The one is the grade of beginner, the other of the perfect. For the friendship of the poor makes us the friend of kings, but the love of poverty makes us kings ourselves. The kingdom of heaven is the kingdom of the poor. And one of the marks of royal power is to do good to friends according to our will. Make to yourselves friends, it is said, of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. You see what a high dignity sacred poverty is, so that not only does it not seek protection for itself, but extends it to those who need. What a power is this, to approach by oneself to the throne of God without the intervention of any, whether angels or men, with simple confidence in the divine favor, thus reaching the summit of existence, the height of all glory. But would that you, without pretense, would consider how you hinder your own attainment of these advantages. Alas, that a vapor which appears but for a moment should block up the entrance to eternal glory. Hide from you the clearness of the unbounded and everlasting light. Prevent you from recognizing the true nature of things, and deprive you of the highest degree of glory. How long will you prefer to such glory the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven? I mean carnal and worldly glory, for all fresh is grass, and its glory as the flower of the field. If you are wise, if you have a heart to feel and eyes to see, cease to pursue those things which it is misery to attain. Happy is he who does not toil after all those things which, when possessed, are a burden, when loved, a defilement, and when lost, a torment. Will it not be better to have the honor to renounce them than the vexation to lose them? Or will it be more prudent to yield them up for the love of Christ than to have them taken away by death? Death, which is a robber lying in wait for you, into whose hands you cannot help falling, with all that belongs to you. When he shall do so, you cannot foresee, because he will come as a thief in the night. You brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that you carry nothing out. You shall sleep with your sleep, and find nothing in your hands. But these things you know well, and it would be superfluous laboriously to teach them to you. Rather, I will pray God that you may have the grace to fulfill in practice what it has been given you already to know. Letter number 48 to Magister Walter de Chamont. He exhorts him to flee from the world, advising him to prefer the cause and the interests of his soul to those of parents. My dear Walter, I often grieve my heart about you whenever the most pleasant remembrance of you comes back to me, seeing how you consume in vain occupations the flower of your youth, the sharpness of your intellect, the store of your learning and skill, and also what is more excellent in a Christian than all of these gifts, the pure and innocent character which distinguishes you, since you use so great endowments to serve not Christ the giver, but things transitory. What if, which God forbid, a sudden death should seize and shatter at a stroke of all those gifts of yours, as it were with the rush of a burning and raging wind, just like the winds whirl about and dry grass, or as the leaves of herbs quickly fall? What then will you carry with you of all your labor which you have wrought upon the earth? What return will you render unto the Lord for all the benefits that he hath done unto you? What gain will you bring unto your creditor for those many talents committed to you? If he shall find your hand empty, who, though a liberal bestower of his gifts, exacts a strict account of their use? For he shall come, will come, and will not tarry, and will require that which is his own with usury. For he claims all that his own, which seems to ennoble you in your land, with favors full at once of dignity and of danger, noble parentage, sound health, elegance of person, quick apprehension, useful knowledge, uprightness of life, all glorious things indeed, but they are his from whom they are. If you use them for yourself, there is one who seeks and judges. But be it so, suppose that you may for a while call these things yours, and boast in the praise they bring you, and be called to men Rabbi, and make for yourself a great name. though only upon the earth. What shall be left to you after death of all these things? Scarcely a remembrance alone, and that too only upon the earth. For it is written, they have slept their sleep, and all the men whose hands were mighty have found nothing. If this be the end of all your labors, allow me to say so. What have you more than a beast of burden? Indeed, it will be said even of your palfrey when he is dead that he was good. Look to it then, how you must answer it before that terrible judgment throne, if you have received your soul in vain, and such a soul, if you are found to have done nothing more with your immortal and reasonable soul than some beast with his. For the soul of a brute lives no longer than the body which it animates, and at one and the same moment it both ceases to give life and to live. Of what will you deem yourself worthy, who, being made in the image of your Creator, do not guard the dignity of so great a majesty, and being a man, but not understanding your honor, art compared unto the foolish beasts, and made like unto them, seeing that forsooth you labor at nothing of a spiritual or eternal nature, but like the spirit of a beast, which as soon as it loosed from the body is dissolved with the body, have been content to think of nothing but material and temporal goods, turning a deaf ear to the gospel precept, labor not for the meat that perishes, but for that meat which endures unto everlasting life. But you know well that it is written that only he ascends into the hill of the Lord who hath not lift up his mind unto vanity, and not even he, except he hath clean hands and a pure heart. I leave you to decide if you dare to claim this of your deeds and thoughts at the present. But if you are not able to do so, judge what is the reward of iniquity, if mere unfruitfulness is enough for damnation. And indeed, the throne or thistle will not be safe when the axe shall be seen laid to the root of the fruit tree, nor will he spare the thorn which stings, who threatens even the barren plant. Woe then, double woe to him of whom it shall be said, I looked that he should bring forth grapes, and he hath brought forth wild grapes. But I know how freely and how fully you can nourish these thoughts, though I be silent. But yet I know that, constrained by love of your mother, you are not as yet able to abandon what you have long known how to despise. What answer shall I make to you in this matter, that you should leave your mother? That seems inhuman, that you should remain with her. But what a misery for her to be a cause of ruin to her son, that you should fight at once for the world and for Christ. But no man can serve two masters. Your mother's wishes, being contrary to your salvation, is equally so to her own. Choose, therefore, of these two alternatives, which you will, either that is, to secure the wish of one or the salvation of both. But if you love her much, have the courage to leave her for her sake, lest if you leave Christ to remain with her, she also will perish on your account. Else you have ill served her who bear you, if she perish on your account. For how doth she escape destruction who hath ruined him whom she bare? And I have spoken this in order that in some way to stoop to assist you somewhat worldly affection. Moreover, it is faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation. Although it is impious to despise a mother, yet to despise her for Christ's sake is most pious. For he who said, "Honor your father and your mother," himself also said, "He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." Letter number 49 to Romanos, the subdeacon of the Roman Curia. He urges upon him the proposal of the religious life, recalling the thought of death. Bernard, abbot of Clairvaux, to his dear Romanus and to his friend. My dearest friend, how good you are to me in renewing by a letter the sweet recollection of yourself and excusing in my some tiresome delay. It is not possible that any forgetfulness of your affection could ever invade the hearts of those who love you. But I confess, I thought you had almost forgotten yourself until I saw your letter. So now, no more delays. Fulfill quickly the promise that you have written. And if your pen truly expresses your purpose, let your acts correspond to it. Why do you delay to give birth to that spirit of salvation which you have so long conceived? Nothing is more certain to mortals than death. Nothing more uncertain than the hour of death, since it is to come upon us as a thief in the night. Woe unto them who are still with child of that good intention in that day, if it shall anticipate and prevent this birth of salvation. Alas, it will pierce through the house and destroy the holy seed. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction shall come upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. I wish you not to flee from death, but only to fear it. For the just, though he avoids it not, because he knows that it is inevitable, yet does not fear it. Moreover, he awaits it as a rest and receives it in perfect security. For as it is the exit from the present life, so it is the entrance into a better. Death is good, if by it thou die to sin, that thou may live unto righteousness. It is necessary that this death should go before, in order that the other which follows after may be safe. In this life, so long as it lasts, prepare for yourself that life which lasts forever. While you live in the flesh, die unto the world, that after the death of the flesh, you may begin to live unto God. For what if death rend asunder the coarse envelope of your body so long as from that moment it clothes you with a garment of joy? Oh, how blessed are the dead which die in the Lord, for they hear from the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors. And not only so, but also from new life comes pleasure, and from eternity safety. Happy, therefore, is the death of the just because of its rest, better because of its new life, best because of its safety. On the other hand, worst of all is the death of sinners. And here, why worse? It is bad indeed, through loss of the world. It is worse through separation from the flesh. Worst of all, through double pain of worm and fire. Up then, hasten, go forth out of the world, and renounce it entirely. Let your soul die the death of the righteous, that your last end also may be like his. Oh, how dear in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Flee, I pray you, lest you stand in the way of sinners. How can you live where you durst not die? Letter number 50, to Geoffrey of Lisieux. He grieves at his having abandoned his purpose to enter the religious life and returned to the world. He exhorts him to be wise again. I am grieved for you, my son Geoffrey. I am grieved for you, and not without reason. For who would not grieve that the flower of your youth, which amid the joy of angels you offered unimpaired to God for the order of a sweet smell, should now be trampled under the feet of devils, stained by the filthiness of vice and the uncleanness of the world? How can you, who once was called by God, follow the devil who calls you back? How is it that you, whom Christ began to draw after himself, have suddenly withdrawn your foot from the very threshold of glory? In you I now have proof of the truth of the Lord's word when he said, a man's foes shall be they of his own household. Your friends and kinsfolk have approached and stood against you. They have called you back into the jaws of the lion and have placed you once more in the gates of death. They have placed you in dark places, like the dead of this world. And now it is a matter for little surprise that you are descending into the belly of hell, which is hasting to swallow you up and to give you over to as prey to be devoured by those who roar in their hunger. Return, I pray you, return before the deep swallow thee up and the pit shut her mouth upon you, before you sink whence you shall never more rise, before you be bound hand and foot and cast into outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth, before you be thrust down to the place of darkness and covered with the gloom of death. Perhaps you blush to return because you gave way for an hour. Blush indeed for your flight, but do not blush to return to the battle after your flight and to fight again. The fight is not over yet. Not yet have the opposing lines drawn off from each other. Victory is still in your power. If you will, we are unwilling to conquer without you, and we do not grudge to you your share of glory. I will even gladly come to meet you and gladly welcome you with open arms, saying, it is meet that we should make merry and be glad. For this thy brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost, and now he is found. Letter number 51 to the Virgin Sophia. He praises her for having despised the glory of the world and setting forth the praises, privileges, and rewards of religious virgins, exhorts her to persevere. Bernard, Abbot of Clairvaux, to the Virgin Sophia, that she may keep the title of virginity and attain its reward. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. I rejoice with you, my daughter, in the glory of your virtue, whereby, as I hear, you have been enabled to reject the deceitful glory of the world. That indeed deserves rejection and disdain. But whereas many who in other respects are wise are in their estimation of worldly glory become foolish, You deserve to be praised for not being deceived. It is as the flower of the grass, a vapor that appears for a little time, and every degree of that glory is without doubt more full of care than joy. At one time you have claims to advance, at another yourself to defend. You envy others, or are suspicious of them. You are continually aiming to acquire what you do not possess, and the passion for acquiring is not satisfied, even by success. And as long as this is the case, what rest is there in your glory? But if any there be, its enjoyment quickly passes, never to return, while care remains never to leave. Besides, see how many fail to attain that enjoyment, and yet how few despise it. Why so? Just because, though many of necessity endure it, the deprivation of pleasure, yet but few make of doing so a virtue. Few, I say, very few, and particularly of the nobly born. Indeed, not many noble are called, but God hath chosen the base things of the world. You are, then, blessed and privileged among women of your rank in that, while others strive in rivalry for worldly glory, you by your contempt of this glory are raised to a greater height of glory, and are elevated by glory of a higher kind. Certainly you are the more renowned and illustrious for having made yourself voluntarily humble than for your birth in a high rank. For the one who is your own achievement by the grace of God, the other is the doing of your ancestors, and that which is your own is the more precarious, precious, as it is the most rare. For if among men virtue is rare, a rare bird on the earth, how much rarer is it in the case of a weak woman of high birth? Who can find a virtuous woman? Much more, a virtuous woman of high birth as well. Although God is not by any means an acceptor of persons, yet I know not how virtue is more pleasing in those of noble birth. Perhaps that may be because it is more conspicuous. For if a man is of mean birth and is devoid of glory, it is not easily clear whether he lacks virtue because he does not wish for it, or because he cannot attain it. I honor virtue when under stress of necessity, but I honor more the virtue which a free choice adopts than that which necessity imposes. Let other women, then, who have not any other hope, contend for the cheap, fleeting, and paltry glory of things that vanish and deceive. Do you cling to the hope that confounds not? Do you keep yourself, I say, for that far more exceeding weight of glory, which our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for you on high? And if the daughters of Belial reproach you, those who walk with stretched forth necks, mincing as they go, decked out and adorned like a temple, answer them, my kingdom is not of this world. Answer them, my time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. Answer them, my glory hid is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is my life, shall appear, then shall I also appear with him in glory. And yet, if one needs must glory, you also may glory freely and fearlessly, only in the Lord. I omit the crown which the Lord hath prepared for you forever. I say nothing of the promises which await you hereafter, that as a happy bride you are to be admitted to behold with open face the glory of your bridegroom.